You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last Night in Twisted River is John Irving's 12th novel, set in the rural New England he explored in books like The Cider House Rules and A Prayer for Owen Meany. The narrative follows a father and son who flee from the New Hampshire woods and make their way to Boston, Vermont, the Midwest, and Canada, and eventually back to New Hampshire over the course of a half century. John Irving won the National Book Award in 1980 for The World According to Garp and an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay in 2000 for The Cider House Rules. This new book is published by Random House, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Irving back to our show today. Hello.
Nice to see you again.
The novel opens with the death of a character named Angel Pope, a Canadian teenager who's run away to New Hampshire and drowns in a logging accident. Why is his death so important to the rest of the characters in this book?
Well, it's a harbinger of what's to come. It's a precursor to what I would call the real story. Like many things in the first third of this novel, it's a miscue. You're supposed to believe that Angel Pope is Canadian, but that's only one of the things that you don't know about him. He's not. So it's an indication, truly, that there are other things you see in these opening chapters that are not what they seem.
And was that the plan from the start?
It was always the plan. I am cursed to have always a plan at the start because I make this kind of roadmap of a novel before I begin to write it. All of my characters' fates are known to me. I know what's going to happen to everybody before I begin.
There are some writers who have to know the opening and the closing lines before they start. Others start wherever they start, and then the book, in fact, their opening chapter winds up being in the middle of the book. Do you always have a certain approach, or does it change book by book?
I always have a certain approach, but for the writing of my first three or four novels, I thought it was peculiar that I always got the last sentence first. I thought it was an oddity that I would outgrow. You know, for the writing of those first three or four novels, I never would have called what appeared to me to be a curious habit. I never would have called it a method or a process. But by the time I got to my sixth novel, The Cider House Rules, I had more or less accepted, if not quite embraced, the idea that this is how I do it.
And you're not alone. Last night I was talking to Amy Hempel, who's a wonderful short story writer, and she says she knows her first line and her last line. The rest of it is a matter of getting from that first line to the last line.
Well, I envy Amy to the extent that most of what she writes compared to what I write is short. so that
very
middle,
short in some
that
cases.
Middle ground that you don't know as much about, in her case, there's less not to know about. I actually make a kind of a street plan of the action of the novel. I write that last sentence first. I make my way back to where I think the book should begin so that the first sentence is the one I get last. But by the time I have that first sentence, I'm able to track when the characters meet, if their paths cross again, if they live or die, and if they die, when and how.
Now, what is it about the word angel that is so significant for you? And a character named Danny Bacigalupo publishes novels under the pseudonym Danny Angel in this book. We had Angel Pope. There's a character named Angel in The Cider House Rules. The son of the protagonist is the word angel something that's particularly significant to you?
Well, Angelo in Italian, Angelou in Sicilian dialect. It's a name that's always resonated with me. I have three boys, and I am tempted, of course, to see them all as angels. There's also the famous angel character, though he's rather a wimp, in Hardy's Tess of the D'Urbervilles, one of the books I read as a teenager that made me want to be a writer in the first place. So it's just a name that always fits for me, and it's a very popular name among Italian families, and I knew very much that I wanted the Bacigalupos to have this connection to the Italian north end of Boston.
And Danny Angel is actually writing last night on Twisted River about his father. It's kind of the story of how the novel came to be written.
This is the third novel in which one of the main characters is a writer. The World According to Garp was the first, A Widow for 1 Year. Ruth Cole is also a writer. But this is the first of my novels in which I tried to give my process as a writer as faithfully as I could to the Danny character. I tried to give Danny's biography as a writer to what extent I could. I tried to give him my biography exactly, not only where I went to school, but the self-same dates that I went there. What's different, of course, is that Danny's life, thank God, is nothing like mine.
Although he's gone to many of the same places to live that you also have lived.
Oh, he has indeed. But what's hugely different about Danny is that everything that happens to him in his life is nothing that has happened to me, but is everything I fear. And I've said a number of times that I think when you are obsessed as I am, compelled as I am to write again and again about not what has actually happened to you, but what you most fear might happen to you, that is also, in another way, autobiographical.
Well, then I'm relieved that you didn't kill a woman with a cast iron skillet.
Not yet, no.
the reason I ask this is you call yourself an old-fashioned novelist, meaning you write plot-driven narratives in the tradition of the 19th century storytellers, and here we have a book about the process of storytelling itself, which is a much more contemporary concept.
It is a much more contemporary concept, but I would remind you that the reason T.S. Garp is interesting as a character in The World According to Garp is not that he's a writer or will become a writer. It's because it's a story of sexual assassination. His mother will be killed by a man who hates women. Garp himself will be killed by a woman who hates men. And in the case of Ruth Cole in A Widow for 1 Year, I don't think her story, I don't think that novel is interesting because Ruth is a writer. I think what's interesting is that her degree of research is such that she needs to witness a prostitute with a customer. And in so doing, she sees the prostitute murdered, which is an interesting story. You see what I mean? In other words, I think everything about the story of last night in Twisted River that is interesting has little to do with Danny Bacigalupo becoming a writer.
Although you even include some things that must have happened in your real life. Danny becomes friends with many prominent real-life writers, including Kurt Vonnegut.
You know, I wrote one of Kurt's daughters when I was finishing the first draft of this novel, and I said that I thought that Kurt would have enjoyed his cameo appearance as a fictional character in this novel because I had tried very hard to have him say to Danny only those things that in other contexts he actually did say to me. So even his dialogue is as faithful as I can remember it.
My guest is John Irving, whose latest novel is called Last Night in Twisted River. It is published by Random House. You not only define yourself as a 19th century writer, but a New England writer, and you listen to Nathaniel Hawthorne and Herman Melville among your literary influences. Hawthorne came from a long line of Salemites. He wrote that a connection of a family with one spot creates a kindred between the human being and the locality, quite independent of any charm in the scenery or moral circumstances that surround him. Is that true of you? I mean, you sure don't come out of that. The people you're writing about surely have nothing to do with the settling of New England.
No, they don't.
They're not the descendants of original English
but
settlers.
But think of how interested Hawthorne was in a moment of moral weakness and how inappropriately harsh the reaction to that weakness was. That's a very New England thing that has certainly found its way into many of my novels, that kind of moral overreaction to a perfectly human, if frail, situation. I think I take more advice from what Melville said, "Woe to him who seeks to please," rather than appall. I take from that that to appall is good, to make your readers apprehensive, to make them fearful of what you fear, is a good way to seize someone's attention and keep it in the storytelling process.
So you give us a lot of violence and sex in this book. Why is it important to write about subjects that make people feel uncomfortable?
I think...
I'm not accusing you of anything.
I think before you can make people uncomfortable, you have to make them feel some affection, some personal investment in the characters you're writing about. So that before the apprehension creeps into the story, you have to establish characters that the reader cares about, that the reader hopes nothing too bad will happen to. And then, of course, it is my perverse intention to make as many awful things happen to these likable people as possible.
Well, the people we mentioned, Hawthorne and Melville, seem to have conflicted relationships with New England. I might say that I sense a love-hate relationship with the area in your work.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe myself as the kind of radical libertarian that the character of the old river driver, Ketchum, is in this novel. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a fondness for the place and the landscape, but similarly an exasperation for the history, an exasperation with the things that were lost or neglected. It was my intention to make Ketchum a river driver, to give him a way of life that has even been taken from him. They stopped driving logs down rivers in northern New England, in New Hampshire and Vermont in as early as the late 50s and the 60s. In Maine, they did it a little longer. The last log drive down the Kennebec was in 76. But this is a man whose very way of life has been taken from him and replaced, in his view, by a way to do it that's not as efficient and three times as expensive.
We should point out that Ketchum is a storyteller, unlike Danny's father, Dominic, and that's an important part of this story. This is also a story about how New England has changed. When you were growing up, it was a thriving manufacturing area, and pretty much all the mills and everything else have left.
Well, it's true. I remember seeing those log drives on the Ammonoosuc and Androscoggin rivers in northern New Hampshire. I remember those logging camps, those river drives. My uncle was in the logging business in the northern part of the state. When I was a kid in southern New Hampshire working in the apple farms, my cousins were working in the logging business up north, and I saw a fair amount of them.
And they polluted the rivers and to some degree destroyed the environment.
Well, yeah, they did. And then if you listen to other people tell you, that they'll say that the fish were never as good once they stopped driving logs down the river because of all those insects that were under the bark and got sloughed off and fed the fish.
Just one more thing. Your epigraph is a verse from the Bob Dylan song Tangled Up in Blue. Wasn't that song one of the inspirations for the plot of this novel?
It wasn't... an actual inspiration. It was a song I'd heard 100 times, and I always knew that stanza about the cook and the Great North Woods would be a perfect epigraph to this novel if I ever could think of the last sentence and begin it in my fashion. It just so happened that I was listening to that song again, riding in my car on the day that I got that last sentence. So it was less an inspiration than a kind of heavenly coincidence.
So this novel had been forming in your head for a while, but until you got the last sentence, you just couldn't start it?
I started a lot of novels that had been in my head not nearly as long. My wife argues with me. She says this book was in my mind when she met me. She remembers me talking about it. I don't think I can remember that long ago. But it has been in my mind at least 20 years, a fugitive story, a cook and his young son on the run for 50 years, and a frontier town kind of law, a bad cop, an almost Wild Western sort of setting.
John Irving has published 12 novels since his first one, Setting Free the Bears, in 1968. He's been nominated for National Book Award 3 times. He won once in 1980 for The World According to Garp. Also received an O. Henry Award in 1981 for the short story Interior Space. In 1992, he was inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. That's a whole other thing. We've talked about that in the past. His latest novel is called Last Night in Twisted River. It is published by Random House, and I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
It's nice to see you again.